I promise to say very little. Go on.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, a very special episode of F This Movie, because on this episode of F This Movie, we're effing this summer. That's right. F This Movie, F This Summer. And joining me for this special episode of F This Movie is a very special round table. One co-host won't do. We've got two. So joining me for F This Summer is Doug.
This isn't very special.
And JB.
The table is actually round.
All of the best hosts. F Alex.
We're the best.
Yeah.
We're the A team.
That's right.
Alex, speaking of A team.
Oh, that came out this summer.
Did you guys watch the other guys?
I saw that.
Speaking
too.
Of the A team, did you see Scott
You're
Pilgrim?
Getting ahead.
Sorry.
We're talking about the summer of 2010 because it's officially over now that Piranha 3D has come out. That has always been the ending point for summer because really all that's coming out, it's nearly the end of August, and all that's coming out this week is the re-release of Avatar, and that's a movie from last year. And really things have kind of come full circle because that's the first F This Movie we did. So
this should be the last.
The universe
F This
collapsing
movie.
In on itself and life is a Philip K. Dick novel. So let's talk about the summer of 2010.
Earlier this summer, Patrick set the iron parameters that the summer began with Iron Man 2.
Correct.
And ended with Piranha 3D.
Correct.
And if you think
the
different...
iron parameters?
And if you think different,
Iron Man
you are
2,
wrong,
Piranha
my
3D.
Friend.
I was looking at the list of the movies that I had seen this year. And it was hard for me to find where summer started. I mean, I knew in my head it started with Iron Man 2, but I glance up and see, like, Clash of the Titans. Well, how could that not be this summer? But that was back in March.
Yeah.
Because summer has basically stretched into February now, because they release shit all year long.
You know what I want to say about the summer? I think Will Smith still owns the summer.
You think so?
I think Wild Wild West.
Do you think
great.
Hancock has staying power?
I would say at this point he leases the summer with an option to buy.
It's a timeshare for the summer.
It's a in summer
Boca.
Timeshare.
My favorite Will Smith summer movie is the one where he kills himself with a jellyfish. And that's called Hancock.
I saw that on an airplane.
Yeah.
That is a horrible movie.
It did not come out in the summer. All right, we're talking about
an airplane.
It came out on an airplane.
We're talking about the weird thing is people got up and left. But I'm bumped. But seriously, folks, I'll be here all week.
I'll be here all podcast.
Let me throw this out at the very beginning. Were you about to say something, Doug?
No, I was, but it's...
You're interrupting my flow.
I know, that's cool.
Let me throw this out at the beginning. Where do you think this summer stands in comparison to, let's say, last summer?
JB.
I'm just going to agree with everything JB says. This summer was indescribably bad. I can't remember.
Wait. If you say it's indescribably bad, we have 57 more minutes in which we're going to describe how bad it is. So you are shooting
the summer is describably bad.
So bad that an attempt must be made to describe its utter badness.
It had some high points, though.
But here's what I decided, because sitting in front of Patrick is a list, a sort of rough list of the summer.
That's not everything that came out.
Oh,
that's just what you saw, including Raging Bull.
The best summer movie of 2010. The best movie of 2010 is from 1980.
Ordinary People?
A theater in our area ran a series of United Artists films at very inconvenient times, and it was $1.
Correct.
And you could actually see some films on the big screen that maybe you never saw on the big screen. And yet again, this proves how bad the summer was, because clearly that would be the best movie you saw.
Yeah.
One thing I thought, and I keep a list of the films I see and the theaters where I saw them and the date, because, of course, how can you sleep if you don't have such a list? And it seemed to me that not only was the summer very, very bad, but one indicator of how bad it was is how many movies I didn't go to see that I thought there's no reason for me to see this. It will hyper me into a frenzy of anger. I'll feel ripped off. It has no appeal to me. And so there's boatloads of movie I didn't see. And normally I wouldn't be proud of not seeing something.
Wait, can I interrupt you? You just said right now that there's a boatload of movies you wouldn't see because they look so bad. And yet this summer you saw Grown Ups.
Which I think at this point, because I've been waiting months,
yeah.
We need to talk
you
about
start with Grown Ups?
We need to talk about Grown Ups.
Okay.
and Grown Ups Like an Incurable Disease.
Which one is Grown Ups again?
It's the one with Precious.
Oh, so sad.
I know.
So bad in so many ways that I can't stop thinking about it. And I try to qualify how bad it is or quantify how bad it is. First of all, it's a lazy film.
It is one of the laziest films I've ever seen.
It is cynically assuming that because you've enjoyed some of these people in the past, you will go to see them now, and it wants nothing more to be an hour and a half of your time. It seems its highest aspiration is to be pleasant.
Yeah.
It's not funny. I laughed once at a joke I'm fairly certain Chris Rock improvised on the set.
Okay.
And the only reason I laughed, and my wife laughed as well, it was because it was a reference to something that we remembered from our childhood, and it was just a laugh of recognition. At one point, they're all going to dance with their wives, and Maya Rudolph wants to know if Chris Rock wants to dance, and Chris Rock says something like, "Well, I'm a regular Shabba-Doo." And Shabba-Doo was a popular dancer in the 70s who used to appear, I think he was with the Lockers. Tony Basil used to choreograph
them. Baba Booey?
No, not Baba Booey. Shabba-Doo. Because they made a famous film for Saturday Night Live where they cut back and forth between ballerinas dancing Swan Lake and these hip-hop dancers dancing Swan Lake. And Shabba-Doo was the featured dancer in
that. If that's the highlight of Grown Ups, that's pretty ridiculous.
So for each comedian who mostly got their start on Saturday Night Live, we have one little plot nugget. We have one little character trait.
Right. It's like they're the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. He works too hard, and he's sensitive, and he lost his job.
What was Adam Sandler's? He was awesome.
They all love pizza. We're talking about the Ninja Turtles?
Like, Adam Sandler didn't even have that. He didn't even have, like, a flaw. He just was rich. Oh, his kids were kind of dicks.
His kids were spoiled.
Right.
And he wanted
But he was rich, and he had the super hot wife and all the friends, and he's awesome.
But let's get back to the hot wife.
Who's a fashion designer, and one of the plot points that we're supposed to find compelling is she needs to get to Milan for the opening of her show.
Yeah.
Pure comic gold. And I think I don't want to belabor this because it's just, it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I'd almost like to say it's the worst movie I've ever seen.
I don't agree with that.
We went to see it on the 4th of July, the actual 4th of
That's
July.
That's Will Smith's day.
At AMC Illinois? AMC River Easter in Illinois?
No.
No. Okay.
Oh, I see why you would think that.
Okay.
Right. No, we came home.
Okay.
And we...
I make this podcast personal.
It's the 4th of July. We feel like doing something. Here's a movie about a whole bunch of people having a summer vacation.
Right.
It seemed like something. There's a scene at the end where they gather at a lake or something to watch fireworks, and everyone has their blankets spread out. And then somebody shoots something or something is dangerous, and everyone has to run away.
Yeah.
And Chris Rock's mother-in-law, who's been obnoxious throughout the entire film.
And farts a lot.
Which is comedic gold. Comedic gold if you're 11. Is shown running. And it's almost like in a bad episode of Benny Hill, the way the joke is structured, the way it's filmed, she's running so that she trips and falls into a cake. Her face falls into a cake. Is it 1951?
Is that a callback to the joke earlier where I think David Spade running away from that same thing? It's a game that they play. They shoot something up in the air, like a bow from a bow and arrow.
And you're not supposed to.
And they all run, and David Spade runs, and he trips and lands in poo. So it's like a callback. That movie's working on so many levels.
So in a way, if this is like a litmus paper strip, Grown Ups was made by 5-year-olds for 12-year-olds.
Right.
Piranha 3D, which I enjoyed quite a bit, was made by 12-year-olds. For 12-year-olds. Maybe it's just more self-aware.
But the director is being sued by Joe Francis.
Yeah, I heard
which
that.
Which is insane. Which
well,
is...
it's clear that the character is based
on... No, he said that when he wrote that, he did not use Joe Francis as a template. That's what he said. And I believe what he said. He gave us Piranha 3D.
I actually thought it would be more fun or interesting to talk about how bad Grown Ups was.
Mm-hmm. It's not a movie that's fun to rip on, even though.
And we talked about this before. It made so much money.
Yeah.
That clearly I'm not alone in thinking this might be fun, but it was the evil opposite of fun.
But that cynical calculation on the part of whoever made the movie, Adam Sandler and company, was correct. And lots of people came out to see them hang out and go swimming for an hour and a half.
A bunch of funny guys.
It was a movie about a water slide.
In a summer comedy.
Right.
Now, I usually love movies about water sports.
Those are different movies, Doug, that are out of the view, out of the world view of this podcast.
Oh, okay. Adam Sandler movies are traditionally horribly lazy, though.
Yes.
And I would say that this was probably his worst movie, but, I mean, you're not comparing it to much that's good.
And again, those first two or three must have been masterpieces.
Yes.
Because they engendered so much good spirit
right.
that we keep going.
Right.
And I am a big fan of Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
I like Happy Gilmore a lot for a lot of different reasons. But Grown Ups was bad. So Grown Ups, I think, was the low point of the summer and made me question my own existence.
Doug, what was the low point for you?
Oh, geez. Inception? No, I'm kidding. If that's the low point, what's the high point?
Inception. Not only was it the summer of Inception, I'm going to state that this is the year of Inception.
Yeah.
And Inception opened. Lots and lots of people wanted to talk to me about it, which doesn't happen a lot anymore. Patrick and I did the podcast about it.
Yeah. People don't want to talk to you anymore.
People talk to me just fine. I don't think I've ever had more people who specifically wanted to talk to me about a movie than people who had just seen Inception and just wanted to talk about it.
You should have told every single one of them, I haven't seen it. I don't know, it doesn't look good.
Actually, I did the
it
opposite.
It looks weird.
Actually,
it looks confusing. I need to see it more than twice. No, thank you.
Actually, I did the opposite, which began to make me feel pretentious. People would send me an email. Have you seen this movie? What did you think? And I would reply with a link to the podcast.
That's awesome.
I've talked about this movie for an hour.
I'm done talking about it.
Perhaps you'd like to listen to it.
My opinions on the film are literally on record.
That's the way I felt.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I said this on our podcast or not, but to me, no matter what, I think this summer is indicative of how bad the year has been, because I wouldn't even necessarily say very many good movies came out before this summer. This summer is just par for the course for 2010. But no matter what, as bad as this year has been, it will always be the year that Inception came out.
I think so. And when I actually went back over the list, there weren't a lot of awful movies.
Mm-hmm.
Awful, awful, bad wastes of time, as my college film professor used to say, unwatchable.
Mm-hmm. But then again, you didn't see those movies. You made a conscious decision
I did not go see Sex and the City 2.
I did.
Or Night and Day, or Jonah Hex, because
Wait a minute.
You saw all these movies.
I did.
Because I knew.
Yeah.
Were they better or were they worse than Grown Ups?
They're on your worst list.
Yes, they are.
Oh, you made a best and worst? Oh, okay.
Were they worse than Grown Ups?
Ow.
Maybe. Jonah Hex is more ambitious than, well, almost anything is more ambitious than, I think the dinner we just ate was more ambitious than Grown Ups.
And that pizza was delicious.
Yeah. Jonah Hex is more ambitious, but more insanely flawed and cut down to like 70 minutes, and it's just nonsense. It's not even a movie. And Sex and the City, to me, was harder to sit through because it's an hour longer and more aggressively insulting than Grown Ups.
You just hate chick flicks.
That's right. I do.
He actually hates chips.
But again, I mean, Grown Ups was terrible. Night and Day maybe doesn't even belong on the worst list. It's just, it was bad and should not have been.
I want to go back to your question, though. You asked me what the worst thing I've seen this year is. And this year, it's been a weird summer for me in that I got married, had a honeymoon.
Oh, here,
very
we go.
Busy.
Here we go.
It's all about me and my personal life. But no, it's been a busy summer for me because obviously I'm busy with my wife. And
this is Doug holding it over our heads that he's attractive to women. How many times do we have to listen to this?
We're in the
talking about
a woman. Oh, yeah. Not women, plural. Just a woman.
I'm in my basement with my monsters, and that's all I need.
So
how dare you call us monsters?
I've been so busy with personal stuff that I haven't seen a lot of movies. But I did see, I made a point, especially in the last few weeks, since I've like everything has kind of calmed down, to see everything I could that was out that I wanted to
everything see. Everything that you wanted to see, yeah.
Which is such an interesting perspective, because I never had a weekend where it's like, wow, there's really nothing out that I want to see. Because those weekends, I was busy just, like, doing right. other stuff.
Right.
So, literally, I would see Inception followed by Toy Story 3 followed by Scott Pilgrim's. I just saw a series of really well-done, good movies. I think the lowest point was Cyrus. And Cyrus is not a bad movie.
Right. No.
It just
right.
is it's an okay movie.
Right.
But I saw such good movies. I think Toy Story 3 was phenomenal, and I know we'll get to that in a second. But you kind of, I think it's just funny you asked me about the worst movie. I'm like, I feel bad because I'm not contributing, obviously, as much to this right. podcast that I want to, because you guys have seen so much, but I've just been busy, and I honestly, I'm lucky in that respect, because it's been a shitty year,
yeah.
and I've been fortunate that I've seen really good stuff.
But as a movie lover, you picked the perfect summer to get married.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Because if I had to sort of pick 6 weekends and only go see something, I mean, you got the cream of the crop.
Yeah, and honestly, on our honeymoon, I think we missed The Other Guys, The Expendables. I mean, it's like, I could see this. I could right. see Dinner for Schmucks, and I heard it's not horrible.
And that was most of the summer. There were very few movies that, like, felt like you have to see this.
Right.
Inception was obviously one, and probably Toy Story 3, just because it should be a requirement to see anything Pixar does that doesn't yes. have the word cars in the title. So the summer was just a lot of, like, could see. Like, I could see it, and usually that gamble did not pay off.
And yeah. once I went through my list, I was surprised, like I said, because there wasn't that many poison films.
Right.
But everything else was okay.
Right.
Right. And that's how everything kind of looked. It's like, even...
Okay. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
That's good.
Like, salt came out. That's salt. Just like, well, it was, I didn't feel I had wasted an hour and a half, but I had forgotten about it on the drive home.
And that was a weekend. You know, it's funny, when that movie came out, I'd actually said, oh, you know, I might see Salt because it seems okay. Ebert loved it.
Yeah.
And other people were kind of lukewarm, but whatever. Right. I think something came up at the last minute with my car or something.
Right.
I couldn't see it. And a week later, when I saw Scott Pilgrim, I heard it in the next theater. I'm like, I forgot this movie even came out.
I saw it and I forgot that it yeah. came out.
It's, although I enjoyed it when I was sitting through it,
yeah.
it's disposable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's interesting if you want to draw a parallel that I'm older than Doug and Patrick. And my generation, by and large, like to collect things. Mm-hmm. So you have records, or you have CDs, or you collect DVDs, or now you collect Blu-rays.
And fingernails.
It's a collection. Well, you collect your own fingernails.
Girl's hair.
But by and large, I see my students who have no need to collect things. They will download the film on Netflix or on demand.
Not even. I mean, they'll
or iTunes,
yeah, rip it off torrent.
Or illegally.
Yeah.
And I want to watch the movie, and I watch the movie, and then it's gone.
Yeah. Right.
And there's a perfect parallel to this, to the types of movies yeah. they're releasing.
Yeah, right.
You watch it.
And then it's gone.
And then it's gone.
Yeah. That's kind of sad.
You're absolutely, I think that you're right in that generationally there are differences, but I still think that even, I mean, we're not that much younger, and I still like to have album art, and I like my shelf of DVDs, where I have my wife's brother is the type that'll rip music and kind of take things. And it's like, I think it feels so transient. It feels so,
it's like, ephemeral, just like the software. But I think you two are the last collector generation.
Yeah.
I really think that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And there might even be an economic reason, because I was talking to my students the other day, and one big reason they don't go.
Your coworkers, you mean?
No, I it's been established that I'm a teacher.
A teacher at a, or insurance salesman shop.
At a public high school somewhere in Minnesota. That I was talking to my students, and I got the feeling that for a lot of them, the reason they don't go out to the movies is they can't afford it.
Yeah.
But I like that then the answer is, I'll just take it for free.
But I think...
even though I can't afford it.
I think it's a cultural stereotype.
It's owed to me.
Ben Affleck warned us. Do not steal.
I think it's a cultural stereotype that they're all stealing entertainment. I agree there's a lot of illegal music downloading, but I think by and large, they see movies, they will rent something at Redbox and watch it in a group.
Yeah.
So a dollar and there's six of us watching it. Or their parents subscribe to Comcast or something, and they'll either watch one of the free on-demand movies or rent it, because if it's $5 or $6 and there's eight of them,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a problem.
15 cents a person.
But $9 or $10.
Yeah. Well, and now everything's in 3D, so you're talking about...
Because there's the premium.
Even Piranha 3D, which was enjoyable in 3D. It wasn't necessary at all, I don't think, but it was enjoyable. It was, I think, $13.
Yeah, I think so.
And clearly the economy was better when I was a kid, but looking back, even though I know there's rates of inflation and stuff, when I was a
kid, president.
When I was a kid, movies were a bargain.
Yeah.
And you never didn't have the $3.50 to go to a movie.
Yeah, and I think that even some theaters recognize that they're losing a lot of revenue because of the streaming and stuff like that. Because I think the theater I go to now is offering Monday through Thursday, it's $5.
Wow. Anytime?
Anytime.
That's great.
And then the weekends, it's $5 before noon, I think, which is actually, for me, it's hard to do because I like to sleep.
And if you live near Chicago, Patrick and I have mentioned the Music Box before, the greatest place on earth. They extended their summer special into the fall on Mondays. It's $5, 2-for-1 soda pop and popcorn.
Hear that, everyone? all right, let's go back to the summer.
You know,
Oh, damn it! You know what I meant to do was
don't look back. You will turn into a pillar of salt.
I meant
that
to print
for a
segue. I meant to print out the movies that came out last summer, and I forgot because I felt, on the whole, that last year was a very good year for movies, and I thought even over the summer they were releasing stuff like District 9 and Inglourious Basterds, and
500 Days of Summer.
500 Days of Summer. Funny People, you know, love it or hate Funny People, it's at least ambitious.
I love it. I'd like to talk about that more.
Maybe another podcast.
I remember going to see District 9 and not knowing a lot about it before I went, and just being amazed by how good it was, how different it was, how ambitious it was, that was a really nice surprise, and there was no movie like that this summer.
Inception.
But you knew a little bit more about Inception
in. I guess so.
Well, it had the pedigree of the director, etc.
Right. Yeah,
et
all right. There was also, and Doug, you mentioned Cyrus earlier, and so I was trying to think about like some of the
I did.
A lot of times, as an alternative to the big, dumb summer movies, which is what sort of everything has become, although not entirely, but smaller studios will release, you know, counter-programming. And so I saw a few of those this summer, including Cyrus and Winter's Bone, which is good.
Nerd alert.
And Please Give, although I don't know that that counts as a summer movie, because I feel like it came out in the spring, and maybe it didn't play around me until the summer.
And it's very much an indie.
Yeah.
But I really, really enjoyed it.
It's one of the best things I've seen all year.
And actually enjoyed it more after I saw The Kids Are All Right.
Which was the next one I was going to.
Which is being posited as this big Academy Awards film.
That's the counter-programming. You know, that's the one that smart-thinking adults want to go see, while the masses go see grown-ups. But I don't understand the hype behind The Kids Are All Right.
And I loved it for the performances, because two of the actors in that film are among my favorites, Mark Ruffalo and
Annette
Julian.
Bening.
Oh. I'm not a fan of Annette Bening.
I liked her as the president's girlfriend.
I find that she does the same thing over and over
since what she did in this movie.
American Beauty.
Yeah,
but
it's that same performance.
I think what people are responding to when they go see The Kids Are All Right is those two performances. And it's a shame that those two performances are not in a movie with better dialogue and a more believable premise. Because for all this talk of it's hip, it's happening, it's about a realistic lesbian couple, it's as programmatic as a 1940s melodrama, and as more than one lesbian has pointed out in the media, it's a hypocritically false and cheesy portrayal of a lesbian relationship designed to appeal to straight people.
Well, and that was a criticism that was and still is leveled against Chasing Amy. Kevin Smith has taken shit for years about Chasing Amy for a lot of those same reasons. And right or wrong, whatever. But I felt like at least in Chasing Amy, there's some attempt to contextualize the actions of that character, the quote-unquote gay character who enters into a heterosexual relationship. She gives long speeches about not wanting to turn herself off to any possibility, and that's what opened her up to being with women. You know, that may not make her the definition of a lesbian, and that's fine. The Kids Are All Right does no such thing.
That being said, I'm not the biggest fan of Kevin Smith.
Right.
I find his films entertaining. I think Chasing Amy is by far his best film.
Yes.
Because
his best film not called Cop Out.
I don't see Chasing Amy being about what most people think it's about.
I am 100% with you.
I think Chasing Amy
is about male insecurity.
That's about comic books.
That's one of the things it's about.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I like Chasing Amy so much is because it's a Kevin Smith film that I feel actually has something to say.
Yeah.
Besides, don't perform oral sex on a dead guy.
Always good advice.
It's about what...
Too late. If only I would have seen the movie first.
It's about what one gets out of being in a relationship and what one gives up by being in a relationship.
Okay.
And there aren't a lot of movies about that. There's tons of movies about relationships, but not about that specific idea. And that's one of the reasons I like it so much. The Kids Are All Right, on the other hand.
It's a sitcom, but, you know, that's a little
How
hipper.
Michael Phillips and A.O. Scott love
people
it.
People love
so
it.
Much.
People love it. And
they
I felt
reviewed
bad
it twice,
when I
two weeks in a row. It's like, what?
I went into it expecting to love it, and I came out feeling bad, like I had missed something.
I think it's the performances, and I think I brought this up before. The end of the film kind of got to me and kind of got to my wife, but that was because they're dropping their daughter off at college for the first time, and we were about to drop our son off at college. It's mining emotional material that it hasn't earned the right to exploit.
Right.
Do you think that every summer, or every, not every summer, but every, you know, so often that people latch on to a, quote, indie, even though this is, I guess this is an indie movie.
Yeah.
But it's still starring,
with
like...
big stars.
Yeah, major Hollywood heavyweights.
Right, but it's put out by, like, the boutique label.
Is it like The Little Miss Sunshine, where people just love it
and
so
much?
And
now every year there has to be one. And last year it was 500 Days of Summer, and the year before that it was Little Miss Sunshine. You know, every year now there has to be the little...
Juno is one
the little breakout indie. And, again, they're always coming out of major studios, but, like, it's not Fox. It's Fox Searchlight.
And every year you see other studios trying for that and failing.
Right.
Sunshine Cleaning was positive to be, and it didn't work. It didn't didn't do very well.
It's not Paramount. It's Paramount Doily.
the Kids Are All Right was really problematic. And again, the more I thought about Please Give after I went to see it, the more I really admired what it was doing. And even though the films don't have many points of comparison, Please Give is much, much better.
I agree 100%. What else? So let's talk a little bit about Iron Man 2, because that was the movie that sort of starts the summer, and that's the only comic book movie we got all summer. Well, the only superhero movie we got all summer.
It almost epitomizes what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Pleasant and ephemeral. I had a good time. It's a couple months later. Don't quite remember what happened, but there were two robots at the end fighting.
I liked Iron Man 2. And I think the reason I liked it more than maybe you did, Patrick, I don't know where you... I mean, I know where you stand now, but we've talked about this before. I think that I saw it a couple months after it came out. It came out
maybe
in
like
May.
A month. Yeah, it came out early May, because they keep pushing summer up.
Okay, so I saw it in June. So I saw this movie in like an empty theater and with no expectations, and kind of like, because I had heard from people like Patrick and maybe you and some other people in the press that were like, this movie is not as good as Iron Man 1 and it's a disappointment and blah, blah, blah. So I went there thinking like, well, I really liked Iron Man. I want to see this movie. It was in, like I said, it was in this empty theater. It was actually a bad experience. It was a really crappy movie theater, Norwich 10.
Oh, my God.
Garbage. Do not go there. Unless garbage you live 10. In Norwich, in which case, go there. Support your account.
I actually used to go to that theater all the time.
Oh, yeah?
It's really scary now.
It is absolutely scary.
It's like trying to disguise the fact that it itself is a theater now. On the marquee out front, there's like a phone number to call for the show times.
Weird.
They don't, it's like...
Yeah, we pulled up in the parking lot.
Is this a front for a mafia?
There weren't lanes for driving. Just people driving across this like empty lot.
It's just a free-for-all. Yeah.
It was, and you park, and there's like it's next to like a gym that has palm trees painted on the wall, and it's like you go in there. It's not stadium seating, which I know like we're spoiled obviously, yeah. But it's like it's dirty. It felt weird.
The movies don't stop and start. They're on an endless loop. And it's one big room, and they're showing all of them at the same time.
They pried my eyelids open. It was very bizarre. But I went to see it. Okay, so
all
a month after it came out,
Jujubes.
It was not. I had very little expectations. I think, and I benefited from that because I had heard from you that it wasn't as good as it yeah. should have been, and I really enjoyed it. I thought okay. it was a pleasant thing that I think about still fondly.
Pleasant,
but I still, well, sure, but I still think about it as being pleasant. I don't forget, nor do I think it was like it didn't live up to.
See, to me, like that's the first Iron Man was just like that was so much fun, and I don't necessarily. Think about it beyond that because it's not really about that much more.
But I would suggest that I might not be the envisioned audience for Iron Man. But the reason why I liked Iron Man was because they spent an hour on this guy in a cave right. making a fake heart. And that was amazing. Right. Well, wow, imagine spending an hour on the backstory.
Like the first Spider-Man, the least interesting stuff in Iron Man is after he becomes Iron Man.
Right.
Right, because the third act is him fighting the dude.
And the minute it's two CGI robots, it's a video game, and I have no
Which
interest.
Is something I liked about Iron Man 2. There's a robot fight, but it's over very quickly, and it's like, wow, that was a satisfying, like, I don't need to see this because I've seen this 50 times, and it's like a fight where you know who's going to win because obviously he's Iron Man. The bad robot dies, and I like that. I remember that still.
I thought the big fight at the end of Iron Man 2 was blessedly brief.
Yeah.
And I didn't dislike Iron Man 2, but like a lot of movies I've seen this summer, I thought it was very, it was disappointing to me because it felt busy and unfocused.
One thing I didn't like about it, which was interesting what you said about how the first Iron Man focuses on him building his heart for an hour. In the second Iron Man, there's a whole like middle part where he like the element right. is failing. So he invents an element, which can't happen. And he does it in such a casual laissez-faire way that it's why is this even in here? It has nothing to do with anything.
And even the plot line about how the suit is essentially poisoning him and killing him isn't really thematically about anything
right.
in the movie. It's just an element of the plot. But if you were to take it out, the movie's no different.
Yeah. I didn't like that, but I did like the movie.
And let me suggest this, and I'll try to be brief.
I like Sam Rockwell.
Cheadle. Who's unbelievable in everything he's ever done.
Yeah, I just saw Moon. Well, not just, but we're not talking about
that. That was last summer, too.
I know.
See how awesome
Sam,
last summer
but
was?
But Moon Rockwell. Is great, and I know that's not...
Sam Rockwell is so good, he's good in Charlie's Angels. That's how good Sam Rockwell is. But let me throw this out. And forever after, this will be known as Van Helsing Syndrome. Why does Iron Man work and Iron Man 2 does not work? Allow me to suggest this. For the film to work, the main character has to be vulnerable in some way so that we can identify with him. In the first movie, he's up against it. He's going to die unless he does this, and he figures out an interesting way to do this, and then he becomes the superhero. In the second one, it's exactly what Doug said. He is cocky and infinitely capable, mm-hmm. and he's beyond a superhero. He's an uber superhero, and I have no interest in that because there's no vulnerability. In Van Helsing...
Which I don't remember at all.
There's so much...
It. Did you see it?
Yeah. There's so much weird CGI fighting between the main characters. They get knocked and knocked and knocked against walls and bridges and fences and boom! And you bounce off and any human being would die. But I don't die because it's CGI. And I'm sitting there thinking, well... This is actually about a human being fighting monsters, and he's vulnerable because he's a human being. And he has to find a way to beat the monsters and maintain being a human being, so we'll still identify with him and think, boy, human beings are infinitely capable of approaching...
Monsters.
Well, any sort of...
obstacles.
Any sort of obstacles.
That are monsters. Monstersicles.
The minute he hits the monster bounces off the wall, the monster hits him, he bounces off the wall. Nobody's vulnerable. Everyone's made of iron. Right.
It's right. The post-Matrix, though, like everything just bounces.
There's
and
no... There's nothing
whatsoever.
At stake.
Right.
And that's Van Helsing syndrome.
And it's this attempt to have things be sort of,
I think I'm coming down with Van Helsing syndrome.
You mean you suck?
When you have Van Helsing syndrome, you start pooping out bad movies.
And there is no, I mean, you are the audience for Van Helsing. Like, here's a movie about Van Helsing fighting all of the classic Universal monsters.
I am the biggest Universal
right.
Monsters fan.
And
I
they
know.
They could not have blown that more.
We talk about that on the Wolfman podcast, and the only,
I wasn't there.
The only good that came from Van Helsing is it caused Universal to put out a boatload of the other right. less well-known. They started putting out these gift sets of all the Frankenstein movies from the right. 30s in one box, all the vampire films,
so
all
the residual, you like that?
Yeah, right.
Because I would like to see those films again or cleaned up or with new bonus features. So as a marketing platform for what I was really interested, fine, you can have your Van Helsing, but you couldn't have said anything more true. I'm the audience for Van Helsing, and that's one of the worst movies ever made.
Oh, wow. It is unbelievably horrible. And that guy went on to make G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, which was a movie from last summer that was effing horrible, so at least we didn't have one of those. but it's this, it's like, it's everything has to be like fun now, you know, where there aren't any real emotional stakes. It's just, like you said, it's a video game where it's just things bounce around and it's cool fighting. It's not actually about...
It goes back to what he said, though, too, about how these movies who are watched by an audience that is not us,
right,
that watches it with their friends in their parents' basement and spend, or rip it for free or spend $5, and they watch it and they don't care because they're used to playing Call of Duty or Halo.
Right.
I forget who originally coined this term. I wish I could give credit where credit is due. It's bubblegum for the eyes.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, go on.
One more quick thing about Cyrus, because you were talking about a film that's pleasant for 2 hours and it doesn't stay with you. Everyone I've bounced this off of has looked at me like I spilled ink on the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get this on the record.
Okay.
Will both of you admit that Cyrus, at its heart, is kind of a black comedy?
Yeah.
That it deals with discomfort and bad negative emotions and some things that are designed to make you feel ooky.
Yes.
When I went to see Cyrus, at the very end of it, I really thought I knew how it was going to end. And I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we left the theater and I told my wife, you know what I thought was going to happen? And she was the first person who looked at me like I was horrible. And how could you even think that? But it has stayed in my brain, and I've shared it with several other people, all of whom who have looked at me like I need to be in prison. So I want to get this on the record.
Okay. Is this spoiler alert?
Well it's not, because this isn't the ending of the film.
Here are spoilers for what doesn't happen in Cyrus.
Okay.
And the more I think about
it... But if I know this doesn't happen, I might know what happens.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we're all dreaming. But wait, Doug's wearing his wedding ring. Patrick, what are you doing with that little metal top?
Putting it in my mouth. It's got lead. It tastes sweet. I don't feel good.
If you've seen Cyrus, try this on for size.
All 10 of you.
It really did poorly?
No, I don't know.
At the end of Cyrus, Jonah Hill...
We have 10 audience members.
Jonah Hill shows up at John Reilly's apartment and pretty much apologizes for everything that he's done. And John Reilly drives him home. And we see Jonah Hill say, I think you left some of your stuff in the garage. And he goes out of frame. And John C. Reilly sees Marissa Tomei on the balcony. And the assumption is things are going to get better and they may rekindle their relationship. So, it's a fill-in-the-dots, happy ending. It's at least a hopeful ending.
So also spoilers for what does happen in Cyrus.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I usually make it a habit of not giving away the ending of a film.
So, wait, what's that? Did you tell?
No, we're not there yet.
Okay.
He just described the exact ending.
Oh, can we edit that out?
No, who cares? No one's seeing Cyrus, please.
Here's my version.
No one goes on a water slide.
Here's my version. And I think this is much more in tune with the rest of the film. Think of the first three quarters of the film. He drives Jonah Hill home. Jonah Hill says, you left some of your stuff in the garage. Jonah Hill goes out of frame. John C. Reilly gets out of the car, opens the garage door. Jonah Hill has gone into the garage and hanged himself. Marissa Tomei's on the balcony. John C. Reilly stands there. From beyond the grave, the Jonah Hill character has prevented them from ever having a relationship, ever.
I mean, I guess.
That's the ending of that film.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it is, because I think
the rest of that film is dark.
It's not that dark. I don't think it's that dark. I mean, I think it's I think it's actually still kind of a warm movie that likes its characters. And I think if it gives you that ending, it's a movie that hates its characters and you.
I did give it credit in the middle portion for dealing very honestly with what each of the three characters need.
Right.
And why they're acting the way they act.
There was something I think you said, if you want to repeat it now, about how John C. Reilly's character, it's one of the, in a movie you, we're so used to seeing Meet the Fockers and
Dinner for Schmucks.
Dinner for Schmucks, where a character cannot, and please.
Just what I liked about Cyrus.
I was going to take this for my own, but I'll say it. Patrick, you thought of this first.
Oh, thank you. What I liked about Cyrus, I could have done without all of the Jonah Hill is a weird, awkward cock blocker and all that
man
stuff.
Man child.
But like,
I hate cock blockers, though.
Yeah, what I liked about the John C. Reilly character was that, for the most part, he acted like a human being. And when something bothered him, he kind of would...
He addressed it.
Address it and speak about it. And he was as honest as he could be in a lot of situations.
It wasn't like, no, but I mean,
while sparing the feelings of others. And then you go see Dinner for Schmucks, and no, everyone is in a movie, and everyone is from another planet, and no one says the truth, which could fix any given situation.
Roger Ebert once famously coined the term idiot plot, a movie that would instantly come to an end if everyone in the film were not an idiot.
And that was Dinner for Schmucks.
Because my favorite scene in Cyrus was the scene where John C. Reilly takes Jonah Hill aside and says, I have a tremendous amount of affection for my ex-wife. Mm-hmm. If you do anything at this wedding to ruin it or do something awful, what's the exact word that he says?
I'll punch you. Isn't it like I'll punch you? And have you ever been punched?
Yeah, it's something about like I will knock you out or I will.
I will knock you out. I will physically knock you out. Have you ever been knocked out? Again, like you said, not exaggerated weirdness.
Right.
But then he puts the cum in his hair and it goes up. And it's
and that's why the stuff.
There's something about Cyrus.
That's why the stuff with Jonah Hill felt to me like exaggerated weirdness. I would have rather just seen a movie about three unusual people dealing with a situation, not this weird underhanded.
And that's Dinner for Schmucks.
Sabotage.
Usually you love Bar Mitzvah DJ Paul Rudd Zinsky.
That's right. I do. But Dinner for Schmucks, I did not love. I didn't hate it, but I did not love it by any means.
You know, I look at the previews and the trailer, and it's like, who do you see? Larry Wilmore. You see,
right.
You know,
right.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, there's good people, right?
My God, it's just this all, I mean, not all star, but it's right. For the nerd set, it's kind of like, it's pretty cool to see something like that.
And in terms of comedies, this summer we had Dinner for Schmucks, Grown Ups, which we've already talked about, The Other Guys, which you and I talked about a little bit on a previous podcast, and MacGruber. Am I missing any?
When did Date Night come out?
In the spring, yeah. April. Okay, Date Night sucked, too. So
right, well, I'm just saying it feels like that same...
Right.
I think every single movie you've just named was okay. I laughed a couple times, but I keep waiting for a classic comedy.
Yeah.
And maybe the truth is, and again, I don't remember who originally said this, 90% of everything is crap.
Right.
But there are classic comedies.
I said that. I coined that. Please give me credit.
just kidding.
I think even
classic comedies exist.
Right.
With two Ks, though.
Classic comedy capers.
And even some in recent years, while perhaps not classic comedies, have been comedies that I would say, I'm going to revisit that a number of times in the future.
Well,
it's
you
a
love
very
the hangover.
Good. Yeah, right. It's a very good comedy that I will watch for years and years. It's probably not a classic, but none of these would constitute that, I don't think.
No. And again, I like movies that are okay. I don't like movies that are bad. I like movies that are good. My problem with the summer is that too many of them were just okay. There were too many of them I felt I could skip. And there was one masterpiece.
Yeah. When did Kick-Ass come out?
April.
So those aren't, okay, those aren't.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It all bleeds together because right. The year. Because
you love Kick-Ass.
Yeah, but summer used to be a specific kind of movie, but now that's the movie that comes out all year long. Right. And so
except in November and December when in a bid for a different kind of marketing, mm-hmm. we get all the award-worthy films.
Right, but even those months now are like half award caliber movies, maybe not even half, and half big event movies that they want people to go see
over Christmas.
Right.
And it's ironic
the squeakquel still comes out in December.
It's ironic that the Academy just went back to 10 Best Picture nominees at the exact time that there are no longer even 5. This is the definition of counterintuitive.
Yeah, even last summer was Star Trek, right?
Yeah, Star Trek came out last
year. And that wasn't even up for a Best Picture, and I love Star Trek.
And that was the start of last summer, so that was your indication that this is going to be a good summer.
Right. Last year was a good year for movies.
It was, man. This year has been terrible.
This year is horrible on lots of levels. Movies, marriages.
I've seen...
just kidding.
You know...
That's a JK.
Throughout the year, I have like a running tally of, well, what would be on my 10 best list? Mm-hmm. And it's August is almost over. So we're looking at 4 more months of the year. I maybe have 4 Inception. Movies, maybe only 3.
Inception, well, Kick-Ass.
He has 4 movies, but they're all Inception.
Yeah. Inception, Kick-Ass, Please Give.
Toy Story 3? Come if on, the that's year, a 10 best. Listen, I love that movie.
If the year, well, we'll get to that.
Okay, but this is worth noting, I think, and... I don't think it was on a podcast, but Patrick and I had discussed this before. In much the same way that I have introduced the Van Helsing syndrome, I would like to introduce another concept so that people will spread it like
Please just give it a clever name, not syndrome, but something else. Like,
I will call this one the Book of Eli effect.
Yeah.
In February, Book of Eli is released.
Right.
January, I'm sorry. And,
apology accepted.
And it's okay.
Right.
And as the year goes on, and you start looking back at Book of Eli, you say,
man, that was better than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Compared to what I'm sitting through now, right. My estimation of that has really been raised.
Right.
So by the end of the year, imagine the movies we're going to be looking back at. By December, we'll have another podcast, yeah. And I'll say, you know, I've thought again about grown-ups. And
I give the A team an A minus.
I would include Scott Pilgrim on the 10 best list.
Oh yeah, yeah. And
if the year continues the way it's going, then yes, Toy Story 3 would be on there. Because but Toy Story 3 I think could be bumped off by more movies that I like.
Toy Story 3 is better than
I was going to introduce Toy Story 3 when we were talking about the Van Helsing syndrome because we're talking about animated CGI characters with no physical or emotional stakes, and I thought, well, what a good segue into Toy Story 3 because here is nothing but CGI animated characters aimed at children, and there's nothing darker.
Are you calling
than
me
the
a
climax
child?
Of yes. Toy Story 3, emotionally speaking, this year?
This is going to be a big spoiler alert, and I enjoyed Toy Story 3 very, very much. And like Patrick said, everything that Pixar does is worth seeing. They have hit more home runs than any other studio that I'm aware of in a row. And
what about MGM?
Well, back when they were doing Tom and Jerry. At the end of Toy Story 3, spoiler alert,
yeah.
It looks like all of the characters are going to burn in a fire. And nothing's going to save them. And clearly we're used to things like this in the movies, the last minute rescue. But this rescue takes so long to get there.
And I don't know that the casual moviegoer, and that's nothing against the casual moviegoer, had this reaction.
Idiots.
But because we are people who see a lot of movies, and we kind of know, we're programmed what to expect.
And then we're a little bit more attuned to the right. nuances. But that shot...
You guys think you're better than everyone.
That shot, when the toys join hands, mm-hmm. and it's inevitable, and at least we're together
right.
facing this... is amazing and beautiful and true yeah. and something I want kids to see.
Right.
Because people forget these classic Disney movies had tragedy. Some strong stuff in them.
Right.
Because that's part of life. And you don't teach children about life by denying parts of life.
Right.
You talk openly and honestly about things. That was one of the most incredible things I saw in an American film this year.
The other thing was Adam Sandler going down the water slide. What I was going to say is,
and farting into a pile of poop pie.
Poop pie is Adam Sandler's next movie.
This whole summer was a poop pie.
Do you know what Adam Sandler's next movie is, by the way?
What?
I swear to God, he's turning into...
I'm afraid.
Here's why... Whether you like funny people or not, you have to at least respect funny people for the fake movies that Adam Sandler's character appears in, because they are such a dead-on effing criticism of the movies that Adam Sandler actually makes. His next movie is called, Jack and Jill, about a wacky brother and sister. And guess what? He's playing both. I will never stop throwing up in my mouth. What I was going to say is...
I thought Jack and Jill was the sequel to Simple Jack.
He's a merman. What I was going to say is this. As a casual moviegoer, you're sitting watching that ending of Toy Story 3, and you think, it's a cartoon, it's Toy Story, they're going to be fine. But me, knowing what I know about Pixar and sort of what they've done so far, the thought occurred to me that they were actually going to, these guys are sophisticated enough that they might actually burn up these toys.
And end the franchise.
Right.
Because you remember the fairy tale of the Steadfast Tin Soldier.
No.
Steadfast Tin Soldier is a toy soldier who's missing a leg. He's in love with some sort of ballerina toy. He goes through all these adventures where he's trying to get back to the ballerina toy. And at the end of the original version of that story, he gets put into a furnace and is melted into the shape of a heart. Now, that's very sad.
Right.
It's a very tragic, romantic ending.
Right.
And I thought for just a minute
that
that's where Pixar was going, and oddly enough, would be making a statement about sequels.
Right.
But what we have is very transgressive for a children's film.
Absolutely. No, and I'm not taking, all of that still works for me, but it was just because I knew sort of who was responsible for the movie. And that those are the kinds of things that you experience as somebody who wants to be more educated about movies, is that, you tend to have different reactions to things. And it did occur to me for just a minute, they might actually see this through. And I had enough faith that then they could also find their way out of it.
And
I don't mean bring them back to life, but find a way to make it work.
And the way that they're rescued, I thought was very clever, and it made me smile. I won't give that away. And the long scene at the end of the film when Andy drops the toys off at the little girl's house and stays to play with her and show her the toys and tell her about the toys, I thought that was very sweet. And certainly something that American films are missing lately. We get a lot of mawkishness. We get a lot of sentimentality. We get a lot of fake sweetness, but there's very little that's honestly sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't like that scene.
It wasn't that I didn't like that scene. I just, again, I don't necessarily have
you found it cloying.
That many objections to Toy Story 3 for whatever reason.
Okay, I didn't find it cloying.
I don't think I did either. Doug's putting words in my mouth.
I just like to use the word cloying.
Yeah.
I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah.
Again, hammered home the point, and I talked about this earlier, that one thing that the Toy Story movies keep saying again and again and again is that toys are meant to be played with. They're not an investment. They're not something to look at. You have to take them down from the shelf and play with them, preferably with a little kid.
Not too little, though.
Why is Stinky Pete so stinky? It's because he's mint in box and he's never been played with. So this scene of Andy giving the toys to this girl so that they will have a home and a little girl to play with them, and he talks to her about what they do and stuff, it was very wonderful.
I agree.
Toys are to play with.
I know we talked about this on a previous podcast, actually, where I really responded well. I mean, I teared up. I thought the movie was really moving and powerful and great, and I liked. I love penis.
F this movie, the podcast for 12-year-olds.
By 12-year-olds.
But I really, really enjoyed it, and I remember talking to you before. I think I saw it before you did.
And
I said, like, wow, you know, it's great. And you saw it, and you liked it. I'm not saying you didn't like it, but you just were like, well, Toy Story 2 is better. And I think you're right.
That's not exactly what
I think Toy Story 3 is so good. And I think that it's interesting, our different experiences and stuff, because one of the scenes that you responded to, which I had no response to, was there's a scene in the movie where Andy's mom comes in the room.
In the very beginning.
And he's about to leave for college. And it's the room's empty.
Because it had just cut from the home video of him as a little kid.
And now the room's empty because he's all grown up and he's going to move to college. And the mom just, it's not sentimental at all. She just takes a moment and kind of pauses. And for Patrick, who is a newer father, it struck a chord. For me, I don't give a shit about kids. They're all the worst.
And it's interesting that...
But I love toys.
Patrick is at the beginning of the tunnel that we call parenthood. And I'm close to the end of the tunnel we call parenthood. And my wife and I, my son is in college. That scene destroyed us.
Right. And that's
I already was watching it like, how does anyone ever do that?
But that's a testament to how great the film is. I think that, like, again, certain things work for certain people. I thought when he played with the little girl, I just really, I know it's like you said before, there's a little more, I think you, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you mentioned how Pixar never usually goes down that to make it obvious. It's always like a more subtle sentimentality.
But considering the empty room is very much hand in hand with what I'm talking about in terms of the end of the film, in that there's a truth to it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's not it's not belabored. It's not dwelled upon, but it's the truth.
I honestly, Toy Story 3, it's been out for a few months, and I think that if I saw it again, I think I'd be moved still, and I think that you kind of forget certain aspects of it, but I thought that movie was awesome.
And here's another way to look at it. Can you think of any three that's as good as Toy Story 3?
Right.
It does not seem like the third sequel.
No, and even like the critique, which I agree with, that it's not as good as the second one, or it does so not even that, but it does the same things.
That was my problem.
I think that's even not a big deal, because it's like it's just, you know, it's how many things can you do and how many different, you know.
And right, and it is absolutely a case of holding.
By the way, how many things can you do?
It is absolutely a case of holding Pixar to a much higher standard.
Yeah. Which we should.
That being said, though, I remember in Toy Story 2 how much I enjoyed the Woody backstory, seeing this television show that the toy was from, the introduction of Jesse. That was very, very well done. And one thing I kept telling my students after Toy Story 2 came out, if you really want to see how sophisticated the animation in Toy Story 2 is, nothing on screen is real. Everything was created by a computer. Then how is Woody in Toy Story 2 made to look so different than Marionette Woody on the fake TV show? Yeah. How is that accomplished? That's extremely difficult.
Nuances, such phenomenal things. But you're right, because it's like it's a attention to detail, which I'll even
see. He's real, and now here's a Marionette.
Right.
But you created both, so how do you make that one?
And all of it is a cartoon.
It speaks to a bigger picture, though. It's their attention to detail and how their movies, they're the only ones who can make good movies anymore.
And listen, you know? And listen to what I said. Woody is real. Because to me...
He's real.
Well, my Woody...
There's a snake in your pants.
Would you say...
The podcast by 12-year-olds.
Is Toy Story 3 your favorite movie of the year so far?
Yes.
Because, let's face it, The American hasn't come out yet.
Yes, it is. I can't really. I don't rank. And again, it's
why
worse.
Not? That's all movies are
no,
for.
I am
to order.
You go to movies so that at the end of the year you can make a list of 10.
And again,
so
I think it's a deficiency. I think it's a deficiency on my part. I just don't. I typically have a hard time ranking things because oftentimes my opinion changes, and I'm like, well, I like this thing more. When I saw Inception. For that weekend, even talking about it with you and reading the Devin Faraci article and all those things, I'm just like, oh, my mind was blown, and it stuck with me for so much longer. But the visceral experience of watching Toy Story 3, I have to remember, and I really enjoyed it. But, I mean, Scott Pilgrim was such an enjoyable experience. Mm-hmm. And can we talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah.
Because it just came out, or not just came out, 3 weeks ago, I think.
Like 2 weeks ago.
One more quick thing, though.
Yeah.
You will admit that part of your enjoyment of Toy Story 3 is because you had an investment in the concept from the first two.
Absolutely. I think that, yeah,
like
there's
visiting old
a backstory where it's hard to do with Inception, because Inception is brand new material, which it's not hard to figure out, but there's a lot of... Kind of okay. I'm with you. I don't
Toy
just automatically
able to
know.
Hit the ground running.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait till Inception 2.
The Inceptioner.
Inception 2, Dream On.
That's the return. That's what it's going to be called. Like, if they make an Inception 2, we are officially, movies are done, right? Like, Hollywood is officially bankrupt.
Oh, I thought that happened 10 years ago.
No, I know that it did, but, like, Inception to me sort of stands for some sort of integrity, and if that's able to be corrupted by the promise of, you know, another $100 million, it's over. It's over. Scott Pilgrim, I wanted to bring up, again, going back to the Van Helsing syndrome, which I think is going to start appearing a lot on F This Movie, because what Scott Pilgrim does is take sort of emotional stakes and turns it into a cartoon fight where there aren't necessarily physical stakes, because at no point are we necessarily concerned about Scott being hurt or killed, because it's all, you know, basically a video game. But there is, people's feelings are on the line, and there are stakes in that. And I thought that was an interesting spin on what we has now been labeled the Van Helsing syndrome.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Scott Pilgrim was very good, and I really enjoyed it, and I had no expectations, because obviously, I knew it was going to be a good movie, but I didn't know the graphic novel.
Right.
I didn't know the backstory, and I went into it, and it was just a joyful experience. Yeah. I saw it in a kind of an empty theater, but everyone was kind of in the same situation, like couples or nerdy guys, and lots of people were laughing at the same point. So that's always good to watch, you know, a movie with the same like-minded people. And it was just really a lot of fun. I did have some problems with it. It's not a perfect movie.
Right.
It's a little long, like most Edgar Wright movies are.
Interesting.
I thought Hot Fuzz is kind of too long, and okay. Even Shaun of the Dead is just like, it just goes on. It just, I mean, I love those movies, mm-hmm. but they just are long. I thought Scott Pilgrim was also just a little long. And I even read somewhere, too, that he's got 7 evil exes. It could have been easily 6 or 5. And I know that's like the source material, and there's reasons for it that are beyond me, but whatever. He's also kind of an asshole in the movie, which he redeems himself kind of at the end. But it's, you know, it's just.
Well, I think it's interesting because that movie is definitely, you know, kind of being marketed to or appeals to, for lack of a better word, hipsters.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many of them go to see it that realize that they're kind of being made fun of.
Is it doing well?
No.
No, not at all.
Oh, it's done already.
You should see it soon before it goes away.
It opened at 5 or 6.
With 10.4 million or something.
In week 2, it was at number 10.
Which, let's not kid ourselves, is a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, right. Next weekend it's out of the top 10, and it's a huge failure.
Because last weekend, and we're talking, the last weekend that I'm referring to is the weekend that Piranha 3D opened.
Right.
And if you haven't read it yet, a recommendation, there's an amazing article on Slate this week where they talk about 3D.
Okay.
And he has a very interesting theory about the business end of 3D with some charts that'll make the top of your head come off. But given that weekend,
mm-hmm.
that's not the weekend Scott Pilgrim opened.
It came out 1 week before.
Okay. The weekend that Piranha 3D opened.
Yes.
What movie took the weekend?
The Expendables.
And after that?
Mm-hmm.
The Switch?
No. The Switch opened in like 6th or 7th. After that was Vampire Suck, proof that we are the stupidest country on the planet.
When Jan and I...
Yemen. Pretty stupid.
When we went to see Piranha 3D, and I saw Vampire Suck up on the marquee, I've been living a lie. I've been walking around in a daze. I had seen no advertising and no poster for this film. I said to the ticket taker, "What is that?"
Mm-hmm.
And then almost stopped myself and I said, "Oh, it's the epic movie, not another teen movie version of Twilight."
You should have living gone, to, alive see, you should have gone to see Vampires Suck and then walked back out and to the same person said, "What is that?"
Did you see it?
No.
So that
what
came
just
in,
raped my eyeballs?
That came in what place?
2nd.
And then what came in 3rd?
I don't know. Maybe Eat, Pray, Love still?
Because one of the...
Patrick, I shall no longer call you Box Office Mojo.
One of the theses, that's plural, that rhymes with feces. One of the theses, the podcast for 11-year-olds.
We've gone down a year.
We're Benjamin Buttoning it.
One of the theses...
By the way, to be bored.
By the way, great movie.
Of this article is that Piranha 3D did not open strong.
Right. Although they have already green-lighted a sequel.
Piranha 4D.
Because the budget was low, and it's gotten very good reviews. And what else does the Weinstein Company have going on?
Weinstein Company.
I'm not proud of it, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yes. No, Piranha 3D is a very fun,
quick, very enjoyable,
short, enjoyable, raucous movie that I want to sue them for because I don't like how they're portraying.
Piranha 3D is one of the better things I've seen this summer. And again, maybe that's a testament to how bad the summer is, but Piranha 3D is one of the few movies that I felt delivered on its own promise.
Yes.
Piranha 3D is one of the best movies I've seen about piranhas.
In 3D.
I do think that in every
this
movie
summer
Jerry O'Connell is in, he should play that same character coked out of his mind because he was a delight.
Not the biggest fan of the actor, but I have to admit, he really committed to the part. It was a performance that, for the eighth time, I don't remember who exactly said this, that a great performance should carry with it a love of performing. And the example I always use is George C. Scott in Dr. Strangelove. Mm-hmm. It's just one of the most amazing comic performances you've ever seen from an actor who's not really known for doing comedy. Jerry O'Connell committed.
I liked his avatar legs at the end, too.
It reminded me of that Mr. Show sketch where the band comes to visit David Cross in the hospital, but that's all I could think of the whole time.
The little sausage body.
Yeah. And Piranha 3D is interesting when you compare it to a movie like The Expendables, because I think both movies are trying to do a similar thing. They are promising a very specific experience, one that is a throwback to a slightly disreputable genre. Or style of movie making. In one case, it's 80s shitty action movies, and in one case, it's shitty 70s.
And you love 80s horror.
I do, yeah.
Action movies, yeah.
So I go into both very excited, and one delivers exactly what it promises, and the other does not. And I thought Piranha 3D was great, although
it is evident in Piranha 3D from the first frame, and here's an example where I will not spoil it, because it wasn't spoiled for me. And I so appreciated the fact that the film began, and I said, wow, the first sequence is a love letter to what Piranha 3D is about.
Right.
The song that he sings, a couple of his lines, it is the definition of affectionate. And I was so glad it wasn't in the trailer. Yeah. I'm so glad it wasn't tipped. This is a film that's aware of what it is and what it's trying to do. And then it does it.
Right.
And there's also a great nude underwater ballet sequence that is
funny. Like you said,
it is very funny to my boner.
it's a movie that's aware of what it is to the point where it makes a joke out of this insanely long underwater nude scene and plays the song, and it just goes on and on and on because it
is, that girl is perfect, by the way.
Is being funny.
I had a theory about that, which does not have a name.
Well, we shall name
it tonight. Van Helsing.
And I think I shared this with Patrick in that I thought one of the more subtle and clever things about the film is that the young people on spring break are portrayed as awful, shallow people who do not listen to the sheriff and therefore suffer. Say what you want about being cynical and hip. If the sheriff tells you to do something, you should do it. And they don't, and they suffer because of it. And so the film posits this weird conflict between A, I hate these kids, and B, I rather enjoy watching them naked in 3D. So at the same time, I'm deriving pleasure from watching people gambol about who I also want to see killed, because that also has to be part of my experience at this movie.
Most people I see naked, though, I want to hurt. Is that weird?
Isn't that... I mean, couldn't the same thing be said of,
I'm
like...
I'm calling 911 right now.
Couldn't the same thing be said of, like, the Friday the 13th movies? Isn't
right.
Isn't it sort of the same game that those movies play?
And very much like the original...
On a smaller scale.
Very much like the original Halloween, and this has been talked about to death in every documentary ever made about horror films, that Piranha really presents a very stringent moral tale where the bad people are punished and...
Halloween
does, but I also think Piranha 3D does, because at one point we're not sure if a character is going to get it or not.
Right.
And the character gets it, and you might say, oh, I'm surprised that that happened. Well, no, because remember how she was acting in the first hour of the film.
Right. But and again,
bad people are punished.
But I think there are things that happen that throw that theory out the window. And it's an objection that I have to, unfortunately, a lot of contemporary horror films. The best example of it being the Dawn of the Dead remake, which has a coda that I will forever hate.
Yeah.
And I think it's a cheat. And
you said it better, though, in your write-up on fthismovie.blogspot.com.
What do I say?
You said something to the effect of, oh, shoot, I forgot. Do you remember what you said?
No, I don't.
It was just like, and I just had the F-bomb in it.
It makes me angry.
One thing I admired, because another rule about horror films that a lot of horror films lately break, and this is not something that's written in stone in Hollywood, it's something that's been in my head for most of my life. It's okay to put children in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite trope, but mm-hmm. it's okay to put children in jeopardy in a horror film to engender suspense. But you can't hurt them.
Right.
I think that crosses a line. I don't find it entertaining to watch children hurt or killed. And this syndrome has a name. It's called the pet cemetery syndrome.
No, it can't be a syndrome. It has to be like pet cemetery complex.
Disorder.
The pet cemetery disorder, where you spend half an hour convincing me that Gage is the cutest child who ever lived, and then run him over with a truck.
Spoiler!
They bring him back. Everything's fine.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen the end of that movie. I assume everything's fine. Zelda, everything's cool.
He hangs himself in the garage. maybe this is personal, but you should be capable of scaring me without hurting children. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, no.
I enjoyed the fact that Piranha.
Yeah, right.
Spoiler alert.
Plays fair, right.
Plays fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked it a lot. I don't know. And I hear a lot of complaints about the movie that it takes too long to get where it's going. I actually thought it was fairly well paced.
I was surprised at how short it was.
Yeah, it's very short, but it
takes
a long time.
I think it's good. Movies need to be shorter.
But the movie clock, you don't realize it's over. And all of a sudden it's over.
I'm of the opinion, like you mentioned earlier, that a lot of films are too long. And clearly I'm not the king of movie time, and I'm not the one who should decree how long they should be. But I think when you got multiplexes that would show the film at 2, 2.30, 3, 3.30, instead of when I was a kid, where there were so many fewer screens that they wanted 2, 4, 6, and 8 so they can get the people in and get the people out. I thought that forced filmmakers to make some choices, and then maybe the longer version would be on the DVD or something. But if we have so many screens and so many show times, it seems to me films are getting longer, and that's not a good thing. I'm trying to remember the film recently. It ended, and I was completely surprised that was it. And that happened so infrequently lately. Oh, I thought this had a whole half an hour left. That's it? Man, I admire that. That I had the same reaction to the end of Piranha 3D. Mm-hmm. Boom. Oh.
I'm out. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, how much longer can a movie, like the throwback to shitty 80s horror movie, be?
There is another.
I don't think the original Piranha is shitty, though.
It's not.
I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying it's. I'm just saying it's a throwback to that shitty era
of
right.
But the way that Piranha 3D ends could conceivably set up another half hour.
And it will set up a sequel.
Right. Yeah. Well,
that's one of the first things I thought.
The way that Aliens. There's a point in Aliens where you think it's over, and then it goes on for another half hour.
I think he did deliberately,
because
you have an innate sense of what 2 hours is.
Right.
And at the 2 hour mark in Aliens, there's one more peak of the roller coaster.
Right.
That it's in AI where it ends, then it ends, and then it goes on for 4 more hours with 8 more endings.
And thousands of years, apparently.
But
Can
you think of a line from a recent movie that's more "here comes the sequel" than the last line in Piranha 3D?
Yes. Hold on.
Mm.
Let's go get those predators. That is not a line in that movie. I lied. I took advantage of the fact that neither of you have seen Predators.
Let's go get those predators again, Tommy. Who's Tommy? What a weird thing that he said. There's no Tommy in the movie. I want to go back to Scott Pilgrim real fast. I was having lunch today with a friend of ours, Lindy, and she was asking me if that's a movie she could take her 10-year-old son to. I didn't know how to answer that because I'm not a parent. I mean, I am a couple. Well, not really.
I don't know that there's anything like terribly appropriate for a 10-year-old, but a 10-year-old would get nothing out of that movie except fight scenes.
Yeah.
I guess is fine, but there are probably other movies that a 10-year-old might enjoy.
I just thought it was an interesting question because I'm usually, I can answer questions about movies I've seen,
right.
Obviously. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know how to answer that because what is a 10-year-old like? Your son seems very mature.
What did you tell her?
I told her to fuck off. I'm just kidding. I told her to, I don't know. I was honest. I said, you know what? I really enjoyed it. She later admitted that she took her son to a Gerard Butler, Katherine Heigl movie. What's that movie?
Which is The Ugly Truth.
Yes.
Which is rated R,
yes.
And it was horribly inappropriate for him, but he fell
asleep. There's a whole sequence where, like, a vibrator goes off in her lap and brings her to climax in a restaurant. Because that's a movie for idiots.
Patrick, seen it.
No. I liked it better in a little movie called Lawrence of Arabia.
I thought it was some of Omar Sharif's finest acting.
So, F this summer, because it was horrible. Except for Inception.
That's your fart sound?
And Scott Pilgrim. And Piranha 3D.
The podcast for 9-year-olds.
And I don't know if at any point during this year I would have honestly said I expect Piranha 3D to be one of the best movies I see this summer. But in a way, I kind of did, too, because
you
I
were
was
very
so
much looking forward.
I was, and it delivered on what I wanted.
And it got pushed forward.
No, it got pushed back. It was supposed to come out last April.
When I said push forward,
I meant
push back.
He's like MC Scat Cat. He takes two steps forward.
They kept making me wait for it.
Anticipation.
Patrick actually suggested I saw Piranha 3D with Patrick and he said, you should come see this tonight. I'm like, I didn't have plans to, but I will. And I did, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So thank you for being a friend.
So it's somewhere right behind Toy Story 3. Rank it.
F this Golden Girls theme song.
Compare it to Toy Story 3. Both were in 3D.
How do you compare? Did I see Toy Story? Oh, I did.
I did not.
How do you compare the two? I don't know.
There was blood in Toy Story 3. Really, ounce for ounce.
And a longer nude underwater ballet.
Oddly enough. We won't give away who the two toys were.
There was more incest jokes in Toy Story 3.
Were there incest jokes in Piranha 3D?
No, I'm just saying there were more in Toy Story 3. Hello. Wait, do we have to...
Oh, because there were none
we're comparing
in
the two.
3D. I get
comparing
it.
Comparing the two. There are more piranhas in Piranha 3D.
Looking forward to the rest of this year. Can anybody think of anything that they're really still excited about this year? Because for me, I'm not kidding. 2010 ended with Piranha 3D.
I
don't know what else is coming out.
I can't wait to watch Transformers Revenge of the Fallen on HBO.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I saw 2 seconds of it, and I literally barfed on my poop.
You saw 2 seconds, so you saw 12 cuts.
not to be a smart guy, but there's nothing else this year I'm looking forward to in a theater. In the world of DVD and Blu-ray, though, there are things coming out that are amazing and magical. The new restoration of Metropolis is coming out. Flickr Alley has finally put together, get ready, esoteric alert, all of Chaplin's Keystone films, which were notoriously hard to find. Doug, wake up! That were notoriously hard to find. It was hard to find a good print. I mean, the SNAs have been available, the Mutuals have been available, but that looks like the box. And as Patrick has said many, many times in the last few weeks, if you collect DVDs and Blu-rays, October is going to be expensive.
And that's my birthday month.
Yay!
There's a lot of really cool things coming out on DVD and Blu-ray that I'm looking forward much more than going to the movie theater.
Is SNA Chicago studio? Was it?
Yes, in fact.
Yay, Chicago!
Chaplin made his first two films.
Ravenswood and...
In Chicago,
yeah.
At SNA. The building's still there. In fact, it says SNA above the door. Found Chicago way too cold and moved
Makes
to California.
Sense. Quick story that you can cut if you want to. If you don't want to, whatever. I dreamt about Michael Bay last night.
Okay.
And I'll make this very brief. He appeared in my dream, and he was a douche. And he literally, like, was showing off his watch to me, and I was so unimpressed, and he was mad that I was unimpressed.
This is all a story that really happened.
I swear to God, this is, like, a real thing. That's why
Transformers 3 is shooting in Chicago right now.
And that's why I watched 2 seconds of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which I love saying because it makes me sound smart. And I had this dream where he was showing off things, and I just was... I believe this to be a real thing.
Doug, now it can be told. I am the architect of that dream. Patrick and I stole into your bedroom with a mysterious suitcase. You didn't see us, but we were there.
I am the Scrooge McDuck of this scenario.
We incepted you.
I will say...
That's what that milky discharge is.
Since you bring up...
Oh, God!
Since you bring up...
milky discharge.
It's literally everywhere. Since you bring up Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, as much as I preferred last summer's cinematic output, last summer you also had Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which made more money than any movie last year. So here you had this... all of these choices that were great of things that people could go see, but the most people went to see the worst thing.
Yeah.
And I guess at least this year, the two most successful movies have been, I believe, Toy Story 3 and Inception.
Right.
Possibly the Twilight
which
movie.
Inception
which Inception gives
you hope for that, you know, even though that we were definitely outnumbered by Vampire Suck audiences. That people still will pay to see something that kind of challenges them.
Right? And here's my final thought.
Fart.
Maybe.
Oops.
Given that the Hollywood movie industry is a business, maybe my students are being smart in not going to the movies unless it's something like Inception. They all saw Inception in a theater. They all saw Inglourious Basterds in a theater. But if it's not something special... They won't go see it.
Yeah.
And if more people did that,
but what's Twilight,
we'd have
then?
Better movies.
What does Twilight fit in that nonsense?
Twilight is romantic 12-year-old girls
who
are very insecure about their sexuality and who want an idealized boyfriend who wants them for something other than sex. That's what the entire phenomenon is about.
Who glows in the sun.
And who will fall in love with your baby. My concern with what you're saying... is that, unfortunately, Hollywood tends to learn the wrong lesson from that. And so it's not, let's make the movies better, it's, let's come up with some bullshit gimmick that will draw people out.
Like 3D.
Right.
So if I may, Hollywood, drop the bullshit. Don't gimmick us.
Right. The lessons learned by Avatar were, you know, let's convert every movie to 3D, whether it calls for it or not.
Hollywood, get real. I've known you for an awfully long time, Hollywood, and you were never like this.
You never had two cups of coffee at home.
I don't like how you treat me, Hollywood, and you need to treat me better if this relationship is to continue.
Why do you smell like perfume and have glitter on you, Hollywood?
Why must you convince me to tell all my friends that I walked into a door, Hollywood?
Why do you go over your allotted number of cell phone minutes every month, Hollywood, and engender enormous overage fees on my cellular bill, Hollywood?
Thanks, guys, for effing this summer with me.
I loved effing this summer with you. I liked it when you held me afterwards. You were Big Spoon, and I was Little Spoon, and John was the ladle.
We effed all summer.
This ends in giggling. I like it. Thanks.
FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. See you guys soon.
Peace. I'm out of here.
Goodbye.